Hello and good day, everyone. Kevin Finkel here with another episode of Magic: The First Pioneers. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer format. Keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer.
And my name is Ryan Schwenk. I am the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan.
All right, and what we are talking today, you know, we've done a couple meta episodes recently. You know, we've been excited about all the new changes, and I don't want to go, you know, I don't want to keep going over the same thing, being like, you know, companions, but we do still have to talk a little bit more about companions. You know, we're going to look at this from just a different view today. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what they're doing to the meta, just kind of like, you know, if you're coming from someone who's not just studying the results and going off that, if you're someone who's, you know, trying to brew their own decks, trying to understand why the format is ticking the way that it is, we want to really be able to touch on that. So that's kind of going to want to be what we're going to do today. Was going to start us off just by going over, you know, the most recent tournament I saw. It was actually won by a deck without any companion, although I think that that may be not the way of the future. So a Dimir Inverter deck won this about, what is it, 1K? Like 182
people. Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, so Dimir Inverter, kind of just the classic version of the deck, which I kind of like, although let's be clear that it seems the new flavor is Dimir Inverter with Yorion in it. So all of these, you know, control-y mid-range decks, Dimir Inverter there was shrinking for a little bit. It seemed like it couldn't compete, but it looks like rather than try to beat them, they've joined them, and we now have, you know, two other Dimir Inverter with Yorion in the top 8, as well as, I think, some more in the top, yeah, one in the top 16, another one in the top 16, another one in the top 16, and then some more in the top 32.
I feel bad because, like, last time I'm like, oh, you know, Diverter's gone, you know, it's a tier 2 deck, and it can still fight. It's a scrapper.
Oh, yeah, I think the deck is very good, and I do think that, you know, I did kind of call this. I was like, hey, well, why can't they just play Yorion themselves? People were like, no, you don't want 80 cards if you're trying to mill yourself out. I'm like,
so new cards, no biggie. New cards that it's playing, I see, like, Neutralize, so the cycling counterspell, really nice.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Definitely interesting because there is some more advantage to playing Sinister Sabotage. So that's, you know, that's a choice there.
Of course, you know, they got one, a Heartless Act, you know, which is just all around good, you know, removal spell. And I don't know, is there any other new cards that usually don't see?
I was expecting some, you know, I'm surprised not to see Heartless Act. If it's,
well, it is, there's one of.
That one's pretty good. Oh, there's a one of them. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's the other one I was expecting to see.
The other one was Extinction Event in the sideboard, which I kind of talked about during my set review. I kind of like it as a sideboard card, and you know, some people kind of see it the same way.
Yeah, you know, it does take care of almost everything out of the Black and White Auras deck, as well as, you know, really beating down if anybody's playing something like the, you know, the Gruul Stompy or Mono Red Stompy that are playing Obosh as a sideboard card.
Yeah, just all your odd stuff gone. All your evil stuff.
So as far as the companion version, I think that there's still some room to improve there. I'm waiting to see what the finalized version of that deck looks like. You know, I think the people, they're like, oh, here, I'm going to throw in some more things I want to play. They threw in, like, you know, Narsets. They went up to four Jace. What I think there's a little bit of lack of is, you know, when you go up to 80 cards, you are getting fewer copies of your most powerful cards. And for them, you know, it's like, okay, I'll add one more removal spell, add one more draw spell, or whatever spell. But the one thing that I feel like they aren't getting more copies of is Dig Through Time, and that's such an important card for the deck.
I
almost feel like maybe they need a Treasure Cruise, or they need something else that kind of will replace those dig slots so that you've got more of that ability.
I think, you know, when we were talking about these results the other day, you said there's a really cool Rally deck as well that you kind of wanted to discuss.
Yes, yeah, I definitely wanted to talk about that, so I'm glad I get a chance to, you know, we didn't want to go too deep just on the winning decks, but I definitely do want to talk about this deck, because, you know, we were excited to see if some kind of Aristocrats could come back, and I think it was lacking for a while. If we saw it, it was usually something like a Cat Oven deck, more like what we saw in Standard, but that wasn't doing great. So what we've got a true Abzan Rally deck. You know, Satyr Wayfinder and Stitch Supplier really pull your everything into your graveyard. You've got Zulaport Cutthroat and Cruel Celebrant. Both of them, whenever a creature dies, opponent loses a life, you gain a life. And then the new cards are really Fiend Artisan and Lurus as a sideboard card. So, as a companion.
Yeah.
So you get all these powerful, powerful cards. You're really filling your graveyard. And then your Fiend Artisans get huge. You get to, you know, rally back a bunch of creatures and just kill them that way. So it's kind of got a combo plan, and yet just has small and big creatures, goes wide and large. A lot to be excited about here, I think.
I'm excited. It's interesting to see Return to the Ranks in here, but it works perfectly with the Lurus of the Dream Den. As far as everything.
Yeah, so too. Your whole deck has to be creature. Well, for this deck, it's all creatures. Yeah. You could have other permanents, but they're all two mana or less. And Return of the Ranks is an X white-white spell. You can convoke, so you can tap your creatures to pay for it. And you return X target creature cards with converted mana cost two or less from the graveyard to the battlefield. And so anything in your deck.
And I'm also kind of surprised that it's playing Priest of the Forgotten Gods. I thought that was too slow for Pioneer.
I haven't hated that. You know, when I was playing Rally, I would always manage to put one or two of them in there. I think that, you know, you kind of want at least five sacrifice effects. You know, this is one's playing full eight. I've seen versions that are down to seven. You know, I've seen cut a Cartel Aristocrat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a powerful ability, especially when you really do have things you want to sacrifice in this deck. You know, the Stitch of Supply or Hunted Witness.
Mm-hmm.
If you're more on, like, three drops, then it's less likely that you want to, you know, sacrifice your Nantuko Husk or anything like that.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is fun. I mean, it's different. I know I said, you know, I'm not a big fan of, like, everything becoming a companion deck, but I'm glad to see this deck actually do well. It's something fresh.
Yeah,
something
and that's
new.
What's interesting. And, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I don't know if this was a topic we wanted to talk about, but both Lurus and Yorion are being played in extremely different decks. You know, we're seeing Yorion in blue-white devotion, you know, the white devotion Heliod combo deck. We're seeing it in Five Color Niv-Mizzet. We're seeing it in Jeskai Fires. We're seeing it in Dimir Inverter. We're seeing it in Sultai and Bant. We're seeing it, I bet I could find another couple places.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people are really trying it. So, like, it's really hard for me. I'm trying to be like, is that mean that it's too much of the meta? Or does it mean that, you know, these are all different decks. Like, it's not like it's one deck that's doing well. It's just this one card is seeing play in all of these decks. So really hard for me to say on whether that's, you know, solidifying the meta into one deck.
Here's the thing. It's cool that, yes, all these decks can play these cards, but they're the same decks. Mm-hmm. That's what's kind of got me bothered. It's just the same deck, but more powerful now. Instead of giving some kind of, you know, upgrade to decks that were, you know, previously like tier 2 that can now be tier 1. I wish that's what companions, how they would have been designed, as far as, like, you know, raising up, bringing more decks, more archetypes into, you know, the Pioneer metagame instead of just strengthening the ones that were already there.
And there are a few of them. The fact that, you know, Inverter can play them, the fact that Heliod can play them kind of definitely agrees with your point. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we're talking about an Abzan Rally deck, that we've been talking about a black-white Auras as like a tier 1 deck, neither of those really existed in the format beforehand. So that's kind of cool. But what I was kind of getting to is just a question here. Is like, if you had a meta where every deck is playing Lurus, but you've got you've got 20 different archetypes that are tier 1.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good meta or a bad meta?
Where everybody's playing the companion Lurus?
So yeah, let's say Lurus or Yorion. You know, we could talk about Legacy. Let's say that Legacy, you know, 90% of decks are playing Lurus.
But they're all different.
But you've got totally different archetypes. You've got, you know, several, you know, 9-10 decks that are all tier 1 doing well at tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good meta or a bad meta? And how do you...
I guess it's...
How would Wizards see it?
It's a good meta, but at the same time, I would say that it's bad financially for players because not everyone must have these cards. I mean, that seems kind of busted, in my opinion, to force everybody to have one of these companion cards or to kind of be left out.
Yeah, you know, I don't complain too much about the price of companions. I mean, Lurus, I think, is the most
25.
Expensive one. He's running, like, $20. Yeah.
And, like, we're not even in, like, a metagame right now where everybody's playing. This is where everybody's at home. You know, no one needs paper
That's
cards.
True.
And, like, if we go back and we have these, you know, PTQs and these Magic Fests and stuff, and everybody's got to get a Lurus for their deck, that's going to be like a $40, $50 card. And if it carries over...
But you only need one of them, you know?
But everybody needs it. everybody.
The opposite argument is that nobody's opening packs either.
Exactly. Right now. I haven't even been able to go to like my local game shop to buy a box because they've been closed since like March. So
I'm a lot less mad about paying $20 for a single Lurrus that you can use in all of your decks than paying, you know, $40 for a set of Thoughtseizes. Or what is a Thoughtseize run now?
Probably more like than that, isn't it? 30-ish or 20, high 20s. I don't know. They're going up and down. Because I heard because people can't really send product around as easily because of like the problems with the post office and stuff like that, that I heard the prices are going back up again. But anyways, we're not a financial podcast. Were there any other cool, interesting decks? I saw there was like a Kroxa deck, which is actually kind of more like Grixis Control.
Yeah, or almost more like a, it's almost a, you know, it's not a thing in the ice deck, but it's kind of that same cheap creatures, cheap interaction, double spelling really early, but being a powerful Grixis deck.
I didn't see that many Lotus Breach in this,
it's tournament. It's definitely still showing up. I would not, don't write off Lotus Breach. We saw it show up a little bit in this tournament. We saw it show up on the online meta still quite a bit.
I think with Lotus Breach, it's one of those decks that just bounces back very quickly. It can adapt to everybody else much easier than
the
other
decks. Yeah, I'm liking
that
right now. So Lotus Breach, and I think that Black-White Auras is another one. Mm-hmm. Both those decks seem extremely powerful, but very hateable.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that the meta is doing a good job of, you know, edging those decks out, but I don't think that those are bad decks at all.
Yeah, I didn't see any in the top 16. I think there were some in the top 32, but this tournament, I don't think any Black-White... Black-White Auras made it.
Yeah, let me look at this. There's a top 32 list. Rob
couple
Varney.
Boris Burns.
Man, he's main decking Hushbringer. That's interesting.
Yeah, so all right, interesting. All right. So, I mean, if you don't mind me asking you some questions, so I what I wanted to do today, you know, you're kind of more the Spike. You're more the Johnny. I'm always been kind of like the Timmy, but I like to, you know, be able to be competitive from time to time. Mm-hmm. So can I kind of ask you some questions, kind of get your input, like, you know, what can I do to kind of still have fun, you know, still kind of enjoy Pioneer, but how can I say, you know, I don't have to like make my deck super competitive. Can you kind of give me input on like how companions have like shaped this metagame so far? Would you be okay with
that? Sure. Yeah, definitely.
So first thing I wanted to ask, because like I said, I haven't really played a lot. You know, I don't have MTGO or anything like that. So this is all like mental magic for me still. What's the difference between companion and non-companion decks? So like we said, you know, we have like the Demur Inverter without a companion, and then we have the Demur Inverter with a companion. What do you gain or lose from playing one or not playing one?
So imagine if every single game your opponent had to mulligan once. Like, that's almost how it feels when you've got a companion, because you've got an eighth card in your hand starting from the game. And it's something that your opponent can never take away. You know about it right away. You can plan for it. So you can be like, okay, I'm going to set up for my Lurrus turn. I'm going to set up for my Yorion turn. I'm going to set up for my Obosh turn and be able to have a big impact when that happens. So... it's quite powerful.
So is card advantage the only thing that, you know, makes a companion worth playing then?
Yeah, you know, I think for the most part that's probably fair to say. The fact that it is an extra card, you know, most of them aren't bad cards. You know, we still get the occasional, like, Gigantha in just a random deck, but they're mostly, you know, reasonably good cards that can accrue value and sometimes even get value over multiple turns, like Lurrus, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lurrus, like I said, I haven't really played with companions that much. Once it dies, I mean, you can't really bring it back unless you have something that returns to the battlefield, right?
Yeah, no, most decks can't really get it back, so it's kind of a one-shot. You know, with Lurrus especially, you kind of want to get your value right away, so usually you don't want to play Lurrus on turn 3 because it has 2 toughness, people can kill it. You kind of want to play Lurrus plus a 1-drop or Lurrus plus a 2-drop, especially if you're in something like the SRAM Auras where you can bring back an Elside to protect it, you know, some decks with Selfless Spirit, anything like that. That's even better then.
Boros Charm, maybe. I don't know if that Boros aggro deck is actually running that, but yeah. Okay. So what about playing, like, companions in the main board instead of playing the companions in this, you know, like the companion spot? Like, is there a benefit to doing, you know, either or?
So there's a little bit that I've seen. Maybe some of it's just me messing around. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't hate Karuga in the main board of Jeskai Fires. Mm-hmm. That's the green.
What, the cats?
What is it? Green, blue. No, that's the hippo that draws cards.
Okay. You're just tossing it in.
So, yeah, you know, people were like, oh, yeah, he's going to be the companion for, like, that for...
Fires?
But...
Yeah, no.
But Yorian's just so good as the companion there that... but I don't hate him in the main deck, especially you play him and then you blink him with Yorian. Mm-hmm. That's just gravy right there. I've seen, you know, the Jeskai Fires decks, again, I've seen with a single copy of Yorian in the main deck as well as the companion one, just because that... It's such a valuable card when you manage to play it. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in Standard as well.
So if I choose yeah. not to play a companion, you know, let's say, like I said, I don't want to spend that $20-$30 to get the Lurrus for my aggro deck right now. Can I still be competitive, you think?
I think you can. I think that there's more of an onus on you to be playing something that's naturally unfair. Mm-hmm. So Lotus Breach, I think it's perfectly reasonable. People were definitely still playing Dimir Inverter without the ability to do that, mm-hmm. just being unfair. But something like, if you liked the Mono Black deck, that's a kind of deck that was very fair. You know, it's trading one for one. It's playing some good creatures and hoping to out-tempo you. It didn't have anything that's like, okay, this deck is inherently unfair. It's doing something that you shouldn't be able to do in Magic. And that kind of deck is exactly the kind that suffered. There's other reasons why that deck suffered. Mm-hmm. You know, Fatal Push isn't so great against Lurrus, as well as Thoughtseize not being great when people have companions in their sideboard. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But
so Thoughtseize is worse now, huh?
Yeah, Thoughtseize has definitely gotten worse now, and I'm happy to hear that, actually. What? I think it was a little too good.
Okay, next question. So again, like I said, I haven't played with companions a lot. How do you use companions? Like you said, with Lurrus, you don't want to play it, you know, that third turn. But you were telling me earlier about setting up for your Obush turn or your Yorion turn. What's the best way to effectively use companions?
Yeah, so like I said, you can kind of plan for it. I don't love, you know, if you're... Like, if you don't have anything to do, sure, throw out a 4-5 flyer. There's nothing wrong with that. But optimally, you've done a little bit of deck building around it. You've done a little bit of planning your sequencing around it so that you've got, you know, something like an Oath that you can blink or a Planeswalker that's at low loyalty that you can get back with that. Mm-hmm. Any of the Sagas are really nice to blink.
Okay. So, like, you basically want to have something on the board. You want to, like you said, build your deck around that ability.
Yeah, as far as just what's the word for when you've got an example of something but it's just a an example? There's a word for that. I've been too much brain today.
Yeah. Brain to use.
Work is hard.
Yeah. Much
yes,
brain.
An anecdote, I think, is the word
there
I'm looking
for.
Yeah, the craziest I've seen is, like, you know, you've got Elspeth Conquers Death, you exile a thing, next turn you blink it with Yorian, it comes, you know, you get the
again,
number
right?
two, you exile something else, you blink your Teferi as well, so that goes up to 4 mm-hmm. loyalty. Next turn, you use your Teferi to put your Yorian back in your hand, mm-hmm. you play it again, blink the Elspeth Conquers Death again.
So not super broken, you know, but just so much value.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of the unfair things that you were doing with, like, Cat, when you were trying to play a fair game and just, you know, blinking dirty things with Cat, but not quite that unfair.
Okay. Next question. So, what if you're playing against companions? Like, how should you play against them? How should you play around them? Like, of course, maybe you have one, but let's say, you know, your opponent has this. How should I react, you know, to them trying to set up that turn? How, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so there's definitely some... I mean, the two big ones are, like, Lurrus and Yorian. And with, you know, the Yorian decks, you're kind of on a clock, almost, mm-hmm. in that... If you aren't a companion deck and you're playing against a Yorian deck, they've got some value in play. They're going to get really scary once they hit that point. So, you know, if you're trading one for one and they drop a Yorian and you're just like an Abzan aggro deck, that's just lights out.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get value off of it. They're going to blink some other things, get value, et cetera, et cetera. And on top of it already being an extra card.
So
With Lurrus, it's kind of you're on a clock, but the other way. You know, most of those are very aggressive decks. They're trying to beat you, and Lures is almost their top end. But the biggest thing there is just, like, don't make it easy for them to set up a win. So, like, if they're... So, like, the red burn decks, if they've got a... don't, like, trade off for a cheap creature if you know that next turn they can just go Lures plus that creature again. So, you know, just think about the fact that they're going to have kind of a rebuilding turn, and you don't want to make that easy for them.
Like, would you always want to keep some kind of removal in your hand for Lures then?
You can. So you can't kill it before they get a chance to cast something.
Yeah, so it's just like with a Planeswalker, they have the priority,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But how about playing around them? Like for example, can you ignore companions? Like, other than,
I think,
like you said, with Lotus with Breach or doing unfair things, but...
I think the only way to really do that is with some hate. So if you've got good graveyard hate that you're playing anyways, that's going to answer Lures just basically on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he's just a 3-2 lifelink, most decks that are playing that aren't that excited. If you've got something like a Hushbringer, that kind of shuts down most of what Yorian can do, although it is still a big flyer.
So basically, as long as you're prepared, if your deck's prepared for various, situations, then you shouldn't have too much of a problem dealing with companions.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. Next question. So again, like I said, I'm not super competitive as a Pioneer player, but I want to have fun. What advice would you have for those types of players? How can we still enjoy the format without kind of feeling bad about, you know, somebody using Yorian and getting all this value, or...
I mean, for me, the first thing I'd say is, like, if you can't beat them, join them. I think that I don't feel like I'm forced into a net deck if I'm deciding to play a companion. The world, the meta is still so very open that I can be like, hey, I'm the one guy playing Yorian in my, I don't know, Marvel deck, you know, just something weird. Even if it is, you know, Lures and Yorian, or, you know, play one of the other companions. Go play a Kahira deck and, you know, just beat people down with beasts, dinosaurs, and cats.
I heard someone said that might actually be a good deck in Modern and Pioneer, but...
I mean, I brewed it, but it's not a good deck.
Okay. So another thing then, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit last time. What's going to happen in the future, like... What can we expect from a metagame where companions are always going to be there? Like, as far as, you know, this is the new normal, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we're gonna go into our next set review thinking like, oh, this fits into a Orion deck.
Yeah.
This fits into a Lures deck. Oh, like, oh, hey, maybe this can make Garuda good. Something like that.
Like, will it continue to shape deck building for the rest of the life of the format?
I mean, honestly, it's a question of the life of the card game, because it's in every format shaping them right now, and I don't know if there's a great answer for that. I hope that, you know, 20 years down the road, everyone's not like, well, which of the five companions are you playing? But
would you?
Yeah, I don't want to go too doom and gloom on it.
Would you say, like, the companion mechanic has the same reaction to it as like when they first printed Planeswalkers or like those other types of new things, like as far as like there's a lot of negative reaction and people are like, this is busted. I mean, is it truly busted, or do you think people just need time to kind of get used to it?
I mean, it's pretty busto. I think that there will be some reckoning. People will find unfair things that don't have to do with companions and they'll play them. And hopefully it doesn't hate out fair things. That's where I would be like, okay, maybe they need to look at taking down them a notch. But, you know, if you take out Lures in Legacy, you take it out in Modern, maybe that clears things up.
Yeah.
Pioneer, it's hard to say.
Yeah, the power level isn't as crazy.
Yeah.
This brings me to my last question then. And I think we kind of talked about this a little bit as well, I think, during the last topic. Bannings. Could we ban any of these companions without banning them all? You know, for example, like...
Yeah, that was kind of the question... Sorry.
Yeah.
That was kind of the question I threw at you, is like, you know, if we want to ban, if we think Lurrus is too much, if we think that he's not a fair Magic card, he's warping the meta, I don't feel like you could just ban him, or you'll just have, like, you're playing Yorion or you're not. Do you ban Lurrus and Yorion? And if so, do you see the other, do you see it all being Karuga and Garuda and whatever else, Sigidi Suga? You know, they all kind of have the same names for no good reason.
I mean, I would think that the, I mean, for me, from just, like, looking at, like, the deck lists and stuff like that, I would think that you would have to ban the ones that have a wide variety of uses. Garuda is really only in that one, you know, clone deck. It's definitely, it's kind of pigeonholed there. And but Yorion can be in Jeskai Fires, can be in Heliod combo. You can be in all these different decks. Same with Lurrus. And I think that's where the problem lies, is where any card that can fit into a huge variety of decks is bound to be trouble, just like we had with Smuggler's Copter.
Yeah, but on the same side, it's the opposite problem, is that we're talking about right now you can play a lot of decks. If you banned those two and the only good deck is a, I don't know, Obosh, a Karuga Fires deck, yeah, or an Obosh deck. If Obosh is just hands down the best deck of the format, that's really only one or two kinds of decks. So that would be a lot more warping for me than a broad meta where Lurrus and Yorion are legal.
So you're not making any commitments to something that should or shouldn't be banned at the moment?
You know, I'm going to trust WotC on this one a little bit. Like, as far as bannings, I feel like they've done a good job lately. I want to see their numbers. You know, hopefully they'll release some data when they make a decision or not. And I expect to see that if it's truly that this deck is stopping other decks from being viable. Also, the big thing they can get from Modo is it's like, okay, hey, what are all of, you know, this Yorion deck's matchups in a world where Lurrus isn't there? And if, you know, if the Yorion decks are 40-60 against Lurrus decks, but they're, you know, 70-30 against the rest of the field, then obviously that needs to go as well. And you can kind of do that, you know, just go down the line being like, how is Garuda in their non-Lurrus, non-Yorion matchups? How is Obosh in your blah 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 matchups?
I also feel bad that they're only using MTGO results right now. I talked
about
this.
If they
want
to go down to my game store and ask them, they're gonna have to wait for it to open.
Yeah, I know, but I feel bad as far as like using that for all your data, because I mean, I've talked about this multiple times before. I think that only using MTGO data kind of skews towards, you know, these are all the super competitive people playing. And, you know, it's not a good, how can I say, portrait of what the actual metagame is when regular people, regular players and LGSs, you know, are open and, like, having events.
You know, just as far as game design, I'm okay with them balancing based on the highest level of play and having, you know, the kitchen table, if it's a little bit skewed, I'm okay with that, because that's not, you know, that's not what people are betting their livelihood. That's not what people are striving to be the best at, is kitchen table. They're striving to be the best at that competitive meta. Yeah. So I'm okay with, you know, balancing towards the competitive side of things.
All right. Well, is there anything else that, I mean, I think that covers pretty much all the questions that I had as a Timmy that kind of, like I said, wants to be competitive, but, you know, is not sure what to do in this current situation. Is there anything else that you wanted to add? Or anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I was going
to
say, did you want to talk about any decks that are non-companion decks that you think are still viable? Or did you want to talk about, you know, do you have any decks that you like that are, you know, maybe not meta decks that you want to see? How can I fit a companion into it?
I mean, I have always had so much jank that I want to, like...
I know.
Yeah, I told you.
Wait, don't you have, like, a Teemer Elementals? That sounds good with Yorion.
Let's talk about that real quick. So, how would you play, or how would you build an Elementals deck? We get a lot of new stuff.
So you
in Ikoria,
could
right?
Put the Lord in. Why can't I remember? I just said it was a Kahira is the Lord. I mean, all of your Elementals +1/+1 in Vigilance can't be bad. You know, especially with another Lord for Elementals, it would mean if you're playing Master of Waves, then those Elementals stick around even after he dies. That's a thing, maybe.
I mean, I know I talked about collected company decks before. I mean, are those any good? You know, I mean, could I still play any of those decks?
I think that's tough. A lot of them are pretty fair. I haven't seen how, you know, Bant Spirits has mostly disappeared, and that was a little bit of a fair deck. I think it's difficult because if you're playing a lot of creatures, three mana or less, or like, you know, yeah, three mana or less, it just, you know, you get rid of those three mana ones, and then you're able to play Lurrus, and I think the overall power level of Lurrus is just like, just ekes out Collected Company by a little bit there, you know?
I mean, I remember, I mean, I still think that, like, turn two Steelleaf Champion is really good as far as, like, those mono-green Stompy decks or, like, yeah, the red-green, yeah. The Believe in the Cleave decks. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought, I haven't been brewing too much just because I have limited avenues as to, you know, where I can play.
I've been brewing a lot, so if you guys have any questions, you're welcome to shout out at me, hear about my... I'm happy to rant about my terrible brews. Or my good ones, you know.
Does anything show promise, though? You want to talk about one real quick before we wrap this up today? Oh,
see, you know, it's funny because some of my best brews, like, I was hard on being like, guys, mono-red Obosh. Nobody was playing it, but I was like, yeah, it's my brew, and it keeps killing everything. That's been really good. I got a nice mono-white from somebody I've been liking. Let me think what else. I feel like Fire's decks are not solved yet. We didn't see any really show up in this tournament, but I really have not liked the versions very much that have been winning.
I mean, you have so many choices.
Basically, my problem with them... Yeah, there's so many choices, especially with an 80-card version. But, you know, they're winning. Their top end is, like, the 6-mana Chandra, the one that can't be countered. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the 6-mana Elspeth.
Mm-hmm.
And those just win the game really, really slowly, so you kind of get punked out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I much preferred going a little bit more creature-heavy, having something like Kenrith, and just winning the game on the spot. That seems a lot better for me.
I would think that, like, that deck would have trouble with Lotus Breach, you know, as far as, like, they can't play anything on their turn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, they do have some sideboard hate that they can wish for, which isn't bad. You know, getting that game one ability is nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that covers pretty much all the questions that I had. So, you know, I think we could probably wrap this up today if you want to.
Sure, yeah, let's wrap it up. I was already starting to say, like, guys, if you have any fun brews, if you have any questions about the meta, if you're still nervous about companions, you've been stuck at home, haven't been playing with them, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm at MDG Pioneer. You can also find Ryan.
You can find me on Twitter at Yoshwenky, Yoschwenky, and my website, www.thejapanhobbyist.com.
You guys are also welcome to join our Discord. We've got a Reddit that we are pretty active on, and there's another Discord with that. A lot of ways to reach out to us. Any way you want to hear us, we love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, we got a fun topic for next week. Yay, I'm so happy. I'm a Timmy.
Not quite as spiky.
Yeah, so a little bit more fun next week. So hopefully you'll join us.
Sounds good. All right, guys, that's going to wrap up our show for tonight. I'm Kevin Finkel one last time, and this was Magic the First Pioneers. Keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. Signing off.